This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
We're going to start with a nice word on Parshas Vayishlach. And the Or Yitzchak from the Mitzvah Radvila says that we know there are Tariag Mitzvahs. Ramach Mitzvahs Esa, Shu Mitzvahs Lois Esa, 248 positive commandments, positive mitzvahs that a person should do, and 365 that a person can't violate. So he says that a mitzvah you can't violate, a mitzvah Lois Esa, how do you actually accomplish it? Is there a way to perform a mitzvah Lois Esa, or it's all about just not doing what you're not supposed to? When is it considered that somebody actually accomplished that mitzvah? So he says that if somebody has a Nisoyan, he has a challenge, he has a test, he has an opportunity to do what he's not supposed to, and it's tempting, and in the meantime he holds himself back, then he actually accomplished and fulfilled the mitzvah. He fulfilled the mitzvah's Lois Esa to not do what he was tempted to do, the challenge that he had. But if he doesn't have that challenge in the first place, then he didn't really perform it, he just didn't violate it. So he says, Yaakov Avini, says, Mluvan Garti, so Rashi says, V'tariag mitzvah shumarti. The fact that Yaakov Avini was living by Luvan in the house, and there was a bad influence, and things were difficult, and it was challenging, and he was able to withstand all those tests and temptations, that's why it was considered V'tariag mitzvah shumarti. I did all 613 mitzvahs. The ones that I was supposed to do, I did. And the ones that I wasn't supposed to do, I was tempted to do, and I didn't do them. Very often, people are faced with certain challenges that, you know, nobody wants to be challenged. Nobody wants to be dealing with anything undesirable. We all want our lives to be rosy and cozy and geschmack. And sometimes it's, you know, when we get that curveball, when we get the things that are difficult, and we overcome the challenge, we rise to the challenge, we do what we're supposed to, even when things are difficult, whether it's in a personal a situation or interpersonal situation when it comes to other people, the fact that somebody is dealing with something that's not easy and they're able to figure out, collect themselves, do what's right, overcome the challenge, do whatever they could to make sure that the situation becomes better, it's an opportunity. Now, we're not looking for these challenges, and we don't ask for these kind of tests, but whenever anyone's dealing with anything difficult, it's always good to remember this is an opportunity. I'm being sent an opportunity. Yaakov Avinu had opportunities to accomplish mitzvahs that most of us don't have. Now, do we want to be tested and be in the house of a bad person who's going to, you know, all these different kind of influences that are going to make it harder for us? Of course not. But whenever we are faced with such a thing, knowing that it's an opportunity to grow, an opportunity to do the right thing, an opportunity to not lose ourselves, an opportunity to not turn it into a bigger challenge than it is, that hopefully should make things a little easier. So let me read a letter and discuss this a little bit. Hi, I listened to your class on Torah Anytime about dealing with a spouse's dysfunction. My husband stays up at nights. He spends hours on Cheshbon HaNefesh, going out to visit special needs friends, does shopping and cooking for Shabbos, and last night went out to some place to help somebody about deal with a crime that he thought was being committed. This is deeply disturbing to me. I hate waking up 3:30 in the morning and finding him in the house, sleeping on the couch in the dining room, because he had plans to get up, or worse, out of the house without any idea where he is. It bothers me because it looks like unhealthy behavior to me, and it bothers me because I feel lonely and insecure at night when he's not sleeping in our bedroom with me. I get very angry each night when I wake up and see his empty bed. This doesn't really cause dysfunction in his schedule or our household, though. At this point in time, he's going to shul and work regularly. Does the fact that it's not causing dysfunction mean that I should be disregarding the night activities that bother me so much? He did mention that he finds himself falling asleep driving and his coworker has to keep waking him up. Thank you. Okay. It's a pretty straightforward letter from somebody who says that what she calls her husband's night activities are very disturbing to her, and the fact that she's sleeping alone is very disturbing to her. Okay. Now, if it's dysfunction or not dysfunction, which she ends up saying that maybe it's not causing actual dysfunction, which is usually interpreted as things falling apart and people not functioning and fulfilling what they're supposed to be doing, whether it's working or running a home or things like that, caring for children, whether it's dysfunction or not, or it's tolerable or intolerable, it's definitely not good. I just want to start off with that, because sometimes it looks like, you know, okay, so it's not terrible. Let's say my answer would be, okay, it's not terrible if this is what he wants to do. It doesn't mean that it's the way things should be, and I don't want anyone to get a wrong message at all. Sometimes people do interesting things, let's call it, and the attitude is, what does that have to do with you? This is how I do things, what does that have to do with you? Now, it might be a good question, what does that have to do with you? And at some point, you might actually have to let people do whatever they want to do, whether it's normal or not. But people like living normal lives, and it's normal for somebody to want to live a healthy life and a normal life and be living with somebody who's doing the same, I mean, it's very normal to want the healthiest possible. In other words, even if by the time you're married and by the time you're dealing with a spouse who has some interesting behaviors or patterns or whatever it is and make interesting decisions, sometimes the answer is tolerate it in certain areas. It doesn't mean that it's good or normal or healthy. When you're looking for a shidduch, for example, you're not looking for somebody who, you know, he'll do his thing as long as it won't be dysfunctional. Well, of course, you want something that's more lechatchila than that. I talk often about the idea of boundaries, understanding what's mine and yours and ours, and I get a lot of questions about that. You know, if this is my decision and that's your decision, and we only have to agree on what's ours, so we're good, right? Does that mean when you're looking for a shidduch, all you really care about is just marrying someone who's not going to control what belongs to you? Or you are looking for somebody who you could get along with and work along with, and you don't have to be busy protecting your boundaries too much. Of course, you want what's really best. So I think it's important for people to just realize that there is something called healthy and normal, and it's healthy and normal for people to want healthy and normal. And I think everyone's entitled to at least want that. Now, of course, everything has to be within bounds, and there's no extremes. People shouldn't go to extremes, I should say. When people decide, you know what, you live your life and I live my life and we're good, that's not the right way to live together. When people think we have to actually be mamish one, and then we don't leave any room for individuality or anything personal, it's obviously also not good. We have to find the right balance, and hopefully people should, you know, be able to look for it and get it and understand what it really means. Somebody repeated to me a joke. He said, marriage means when two people decide to be one. The problem starts when they start fighting over which one they want to be. Right? Obviously, everyone could try to make the other person be one with them, which is wrong. And everybody could try to sometimes be one with the other person, which is also wrong. It's important to understand how this works when two people are both their own people and they still live together and they understand each other and they're working together. So that's definitely, you know, I just wanted to give it in terms of introduction. There's something called healthy, normal, balanced, the way people like it. The way people like it. I think everyone understands that when somebody's up late at night and not in bed and doing interesting things, you know, it's nobody likes it. So whoever's doing such a thing and just wants to be tolerated and let me do my own thing as long as I'm not bothering you about it, you know, it's probably not the right way to do things. Now, let me say something very important about this letter and this specific situation. When you mix everything together, it gets confusing. And people do this often. You start mixing everything together. Being up late or being out of the house or in the house or doing this at night or taking care of a crime that he thought somebody's committing. When you mix everything together, it just makes it very confusing. Now, some people think it's the other way around. The more you mix together, the more you put into the pot, the more crazy it looks. And the more problem it looks. And now it's a bigger issue because I'm mixing so many different things together. I mean, at some point it definitely becomes, you know, that definitely proves the point that there's something unhealthy here. But I think what happens is that when you mix it together, you confuse yourself, first of all. And people do this often. They start noticing all the faults that they have, either with a child or a spouse, or even with themselves. And they mix it all into one big pot so that, you know, it proves a point that there's something very wrong over here. But then you can't fix such a situation anymore. It's very hard to deal with things, you know, when they're all, when it's all one big thing. There are bigger problems, there are smaller problems, there are things that are not so problematic, there are things that should be dealt with, there are things that you should just let go. When people try proving one point with the other point, like, you know, I know that this is not really terrible, but look at this. So if that's terrible, this must also be terrible. He doesn't have the greatest relationship with his brother, with his mother, he doesn't get along at all. Okay, so slow down. Not getting along with a mother at all is a problem, and not having the greatest relationship with a brother is not a problem. So talking about it together just makes it more confusing and harder to deal with and resolve. When you break things down and you're more specific about which things you feel at least are a bigger problem, which things you really can't deal with, which things aren't really so terrible, it makes you stronger in your claim and it makes it easier for the person that you're making this claim to deal with it. So it's just always important, whenever you're looking at any situation, people generalize and people look at it as one big thing, not even because they're trying to manipulate the person listening, just because they see it as one big picture, but it isn't. It isn't. In every relationship, in every issue, like I said before, there's the mine and the yours and the ours. You break it down. You know where somebody should be taking you more seriously and where they don't really have to. There's the tolerable and the intolerable. There are things that I can't live like this and it's too much for me. And there are things that, you know, I don't like it, but it's not terrible. So I think it's just very important to break things down and know what you're dealing with. I mean, to say that I don't like what somebody does, right? You say, for example, should I be disregarding the night activities that bother me so much? Now, when you say the word bother me so much, right? Is it a problem if something someone does bothers you? I mean, I wish we would all be living with people that don't bother us at all. But it's normal to be bothered by somebody's decisions or what somebody does. It's not mandatory to do everything the way your spouse likes that it should be. I think in terms of just tolerating people and getting along with them, part of it means that I accept the fact that you may do things that I don't like, and I'm okay with that. And I may do things you don't like, and we're all okay with that on some level. So just remember, just you know, focusing and realizing that you don't have to like everything someone does. And it's a lot of bother you when someone does something, as long as it's not terrible, or it's not personal, or it's not wrong. I think that's also important. And also, like I said before, when you zoom in and you break it down, and you ask someone, you know what, in this area, could you please do this for me? It means a lot to me. And you're very specific. It makes it so much easier for the other person to realize, you know, you're right, this one thing, I should be doing it, I could be doing it, as long as you're not going to bother me about everything else, I could take this seriously. We make it harder for people to take us seriously when we come with 6 complaints at a time. Because basically, if I can't give in on all 6, why should I give in on any? You're not going to be happy anyway. You just told me that you want all 6 to change. And this is something I've seen very many people get stuck on. I was dealing with a guy recently who, he was telling me, Mamish, a very similar point where his wife was repeating to somebody, to the Ruv, the Rashiva, whoever it was, you know, asked my husband for this little thing, he couldn't do it. And the Rashiva, who was listening to this, was like, you know, I can't understand that. That doesn't make any sense to me. Why wouldn't he do that? Right? What she was saying was, to give an example, why can he buy challah in this bakery and not that bakery? It's not any further, it's not any cheaper, it's not any more expensive, tastes the same. I can't understand why he wouldn't do it for me. Now, when you ask someone a question like that, you know, it's a good question. Why can't you do it for your wife? Do you really care that much? Or buy 2 challahs? Like, what's the big deal? His answer was, oh, that's all she told you? No. To me, she told 65 such complaints this week. Now, if I would start taking all 65 of them seriously, yeah, I'd be running in circles all over town getting challah from here and this from there. So I just buy everything in the same place. Oh, now it made sense. Now, the point is not to say that he's right or wrong. The point is that when you're specific and you break things down, especially when you zoom in on the things that you really can't handle, and you're more specific about how important this one thing is for you, and even if other things don't necessarily change, but this is very important, you know, most often it means it just makes it easier for everyone. Now, some people can't handle surrendering, unofficially surrendering, on things that they would want to be better and different. Like, I wish I can get all 10. So you can pick whichever ones you want, but I'm not going to tell you which ones I'm giving up on because I can't handle just saying that I'm surrendering. In the meantime, I'm not getting any. So sometimes you're better off saying, this thing, that behavior, this decision, it's very hard for me. If you could change this, that would mean a lot to me. The other thing is your decision. You are officially surrendering, trying to get someone to change something, which hasn't been changing anyway, by the way, if you noticed. And I think most often, you're just better off like that. So lumping it all together, you know, doing cooking at night, being busy with cheshbon hanefesh, sleeping on the couch, being out of the house, visiting, it sounds like there's a lot of different things here. And if you're going to try to get your husband to do everything the way you want and go to sleep with you at 9 o'clock in the same bedroom and stay there till the morning when you both get up in time and everything else, it's probably not going to happen. I hate to be discouraging. But if you break it down, I think there are parts of this that you could focus on more. And when it comes to determining what really is intolerable, people ask me this all the time, where's the boundary? So there's 2 points. I just want to break it down even clearer. There's the point of yours, where something really does affect you personally, which most often, wherever you have to work along with the schedule, or wherever it is affecting you, or wherever it affects you directly, that's something about you, which you're more entitled to say, I can't work with this. The other thing is where it's really intolerable, which means even if it's not affecting you directly, but the fact that it's affecting you to a point where you just can't handle it, right? That's also something. So, for example, if somebody would have crazy schedules about where he goes and comes and how he's coming and going and traveling, let's take a little out of the context of this letter, right? So if somebody's making you come along, that's where it's affecting you directly, and that's where you have more right to say, it doesn't work for me, you want me to come along, it doesn't work for me to come along. For example, or you want me to do something because you're going away, it doesn't work for me, or it's affecting me directly. You're basically making a decision for what I have to do now that you're going to be away. That's one. Another thing is if somebody goes away and you have no idea when he's coming back, and he goes away for long stretches of time, for example, where a person says, listen, it's not affecting me directly, I don't have to come with you, I don't have to do anything because you're away, but I can't tolerate being alone for this amount of time or not knowing when you'll be back, etc. Those are 2 points to know when you want to break things down and you want to zoom in and you want to know, you know, where you really have more right to say. Because your question at the end was, should I be disregarding the fact that it bothers me so much? You don't have to disregard when something bothers you. You're entitled to be bothered by it, like I started off saying. This is not normal. I'm not going to make believe it is. But you just have to know where you could, forget about put your foot down, just be clear with yourself and know how to communicate that this point is either where it's affecting me directly, or this point is something that I really can't live with because it's being very difficult for me. And I think this is something that, I will say that, you know, falling asleep by the wheel happens to be a very serious issue. I don't know why it doesn't sound like dysfunction. Falling asleep by the job might not have to do with you, but falling asleep by the wheel is very dangerous, but I'm not going to talk about that. But I think it's important just to know that when something really is intolerable, it's important to know how to talk about it. I'll talk about the communication thing in a minute, but I talk often about there are natural consequences called cause and effect. It's not a punishment, they're not getting back at anyone. There's a natural consequence, a natural cause and effect consequence for doing something crazy, right? If somebody wants to be able to run his own schedule, for example, and not take into consideration at all, and because of that you would now have to stay up or go out or the natural consequence would be to know how to communicate that, you know, I understand what you're doing, etc. This is something I can't live with, and I'm not going to work along with it. That is the natural consequence, which sometimes is a big help. Again, whenever I talk about these things, I get a little vague because it's sensitive. Sometimes you need guidance to know how to present it and to know when you're being reasonable and to know what's appropriate instead of just, you know, deciding what a consequence is and doing something unreasonable. In general, when you want to discuss anything like this with your husband, I think it's very important to know how to communicate. And very often I try to break it down to a bunch of little rules. The main point is don't debate and argue about how wrong or silly it is, you know, to behave this way. And that's something people do often. They make this mistake often. It's not normal to be up so late. It's not normal to sleep on the couch. It's not normal. It's so wrong, you know, to be busy with this. You're busy with silly things, not important. How could you? The more you try to prove someone wrong, and the more you try to make them feel bad about what they're doing, the more defensive they get, and the more they justify themselves, the more they rationalize why what they're doing is right, and you just lose it. And you get more worked up and more upset because you proved such a good point and it wasn't taken well, and you're wondering, how could somebody even fool themselves? And it starts becoming a whole debate, and what are you left with? Now, to you, it could be so simple that it's wrong. I don't know. Maybe to him it's not. I have no idea. I didn't hear what he has to say about this. But in any case, it's usually not productive. You're so much better off when you say, this is important to me. I would appreciate when this happens. It's very meaningful to me. It's very hard for me when this happens. Now, some people can't handle it because what do you mean? What does it have to do with me? This is ludicrous. This doesn't make any sense. You're still better off talking about yourself because that's where you're credible. That's where it makes more sense. That's where nobody could argue with you. I don't feel safe at night. I don't feel comfortable. I don't appreciate that. That's where nobody could argue with you. You don't have to feel. Now, some people can't handle it because, what do you mean? Now I have to thank you. So you're doing me a favor, sleeping in the same bedroom as me. I mean, that's a huge favor. Doesn't matter if it's a huge favor or a small favor. If you don't want to thank the person, maybe you don't have to. It's probably a nice thing to do. But yeah, asking for it to be done and letting someone say, you know what, I'll do this for you. You're probably best off in terms of getting someone to change things that are not easy for them, for whatever reason. You do want to be reasonable in general. You want to be reasonable. You want to be specific. You know, if you're trying to get your husband, who's used to falling asleep 3:30 a.m. on the couch, to come to bed with you at 10 o'clock at the same time in the same room, it's probably not reasonable. Now, there are couples that go to sleep together at the same time. It's wonderful. Some people only do it the first year after they get married. Some people do it their whole life. But you just have to be reasonable. When you want someone to do something and to do things that you feel make more sense, you still have to be reasonable about it. The fact that you're asking nicely or the fact that you're being specific about what you want doesn't mean that it's going to be easy for the other person to accomplish. Very often, people try to figure out the right way to make something happen without remembering that the right way still has to be for the right thing, the right agenda. Recently, I was talking to Ingemann, who was learning new tricks, let's call it, new tricks in communication, new tricks in relationship skills. And he was learning how to accomplish things that he was never able to accomplish till then. You know, till then he was either arguing or controlling or whatever, and he was learning new ways to get people to do things, and it was very interesting. You know, it was like a little boy in the candy store seeing, wow, I can have this, I can have that. I didn't realize. And he was pushing more and more forward with these new tactics, let's call it, tricks, whatever you want to call them, You know, there are ways to make people do things, right? There's books called How to Get Anyone to Do Anything, and things like how to win friends and influence people. There are ways to get people to do things nicely, and they should feel good about it. Until it came a point where he was just pushing the limits too far, thinking that this could work on anything. It doesn't work on anything. You have to be reasonable when you make a request. So even though I'm telling you that you should avoid debating and you should be vulnerable and ask nicely for someone to do something for you, but being specific and asking nicely doesn't mean that you can get someone to do anything. You do have to be reasonable in the fact that somebody's a late night person or they are involved in different things that they believe in. That's important. You definitely should take that into consideration. And again, a request is not a debate. So when you request nicely and you talk about your feelings, you don't have to give six reasons. Again, this is where people, they ruin it for themselves. When you give six reasons why someone should do something for you, right? Because what you're doing is not normal, and I can't handle it, and I don't do this for you, and I already asked you six times, and you already promised me. The more case you make out of it, which makes you feel more empowered and more justified in your claim, the harder it is for someone. That's just how it is. When you tell someone, no, you don't have to do this, and I know you said you will, and you probably tried, and it's probably just very hard for you, and I don't know if I would do it for you if it was so hard for me. When you give them all those excuses that they might be thinking, and you still throw in with confidence, you're assertive about, this would mean so much to me if you could do it in a reasonable and specific way. You mention specifically what you want so that it shouldn't be vague, that you both get confused if it's happening or not happening, or it's almost happening, or sometimes it's happening. No, if you could do this for me, it would mean very much to me. And sometimes you'll even have to add, and if you can't do that for me, then I might just do this and this, not to get back at you, Chas v'Shalom, just because this is what I'll have to do if I'm not feeling safe. I wouldn't want to have to ask my little sister to come sleep with me in the bedroom just so I can feel safe. I'd rather have you there. But if I wake up 3 a.m. and you're not there, then... You know. Anyway, without going into examples, there are things that sometimes you just have to say very nicely, that if I can't have something very meaningful to me happen, then I'll just have to decide what to do about it. But what I think is more important than so much of this whole discussion, which I feel is a very important discussion, by the way, is knowing how to build a relationship. Now, you'll forgive me if I was picking up on some cynicism, if that's the word, when you said something about what he was trying to do about a crime that he thought was being committed. You know, I don't know if you look down at him, you think that he's being ridiculous. I don't know if the hours that he spends on Cheshbon HaNefesh is something that you respect or not. I would assume that maybe not. I would assume that you think that he's just being, I don't know if the word is silly, or dealing with things that are unimportant, or fooling himself, or whatever it is. And I don't know how much of that is going over and how much of that he's feeling. So much of a relationship, especially from a woman to a husband, but the other way around as well, has to do with respect. Has to do with believing in someone and respecting them for what they are and what they do. Now, if you're trying to get your husband to drop his night activities, but it's backed by the fact that you think that they're all ridiculous, and in the meantime he thinks they're so important and valuable, then there's so much more to it than just the fact that he doesn't want and you want. Right? This is really an underlying debate of, I think you're crazy and you think you're amazing, so we're not even talking about the same thing anymore. And this is a very important point. If you believe in him, and you think highly of him, and you think that he means it, then say it and make sure that he knows it. And if you don't think so, then at least don't say that, and make sure that he doesn't know it, which is not an easy thing. You could choose to respect someone, despite the fact that you don't like everything they do. You could. There are people that have mastered that, Baruch Hashem, and realize that there's so much to respect. And even just the fact that you're doing what you believe is right, I respect that also. I don't judge you by my values and principles, I judge you by yours. And there's still so much more to respect than these night activities. You know, the fact that he's getting up and learning, davening, bringing a livelihood, and trying to do things for other people, I think it's wonderful. And if not, then yeah, at least fake it. At least fake it. People can't handle that. At least fake it. You avoid the distance and the disconnect when you at least behave respectfully. And you make believe that you're amazed and impressed by what someone's doing, even if you don't like it. And it's so much easier to tell someone, it would mean so much to me if you could be home by night, even though I really respect what you do. It's so hard for me. So if we could do it at a different time, or work around it, or give up on some of it only because I can handle it, it would mean so much to me. Instead of saying, you know, you're busy with all these things and you're not here for me, and slowly, you know, putting in between the lines all that lack of respect. And by the way, he might actually mean it. He might actually mean it, and he might be doing the right thing too. People don't realize sometimes the way they project a situation, and they stick in their interpretation, their narrative, of, you know, so he's busy with this, and he thinks this is important, he's busy with that, and he thinks he's accomplishing something, and he's busy with these people, he thinks they respect him. He's sticking in those lines. Now, I don't know. I have no idea what you're talking about or who this is. But who knows? Maybe he means it. Maybe he's right. Maybe there's different ways to see it. You know, that anecdote about the Avos Yisroel. Right, this lady came to complain to the Avos Yisroel. He said, Rebbe, what do? My son gets up early, very early, and he goes to toivel in the cold mikveh in the river, and then he walks far to get a minyan, and then he sits and learns and until he goes to his job. Like, it's not normal. And the Rebbe is wanting to comfort her, so the Rebbe said, the Avos Yisroel says, you know, I understand, but I also do all these things. I also get up early, I toivel in the cold mikveh, and I make sure I don't put a minyan, and I learn. So, yeah, the Rebbe does it for Parnusa, he means it. Sometimes just understanding that he means it, you know, sometimes you look at it like, oh, he means it, he's fooling himself, and he's being so silly, and how do we get him to stop meaning it? And sometimes you say he means it, and if that's what he means, then it's very valuable, very respectable. So I think this is also just something to think about. It's important to realize that when you respect someone, and you love them, and you're there for them, first of all, that alone is attractive. Who doesn't want to be near somebody who really wants to connect with them? It makes it easier for you to communicate all these messages in such a positive way. Yeah, I love spending time with you. I mean, so I feel so comfortable near you. I love when we're together. I love when we go to sleep together. I love when we spend time together. You know, it's just so much easier to communicate things in a healthy way when the relationship is stronger and the attitude is there. Of course, you can go on then to say that it's so disturbing and so difficult when it's not there. But it's not just something about yourself and controlling the other person and being this major victim who's so unhappy, if it could be something more positive than that. So it's a shame when this attitude is avoided and the whole message is just about, I can't handle what you're doing. And I'll end off with one more point, and that is that when there are these kind of issues in a relationship, somebody's doing things that bother you, whether it's night activities or day activities or personal or interpersonal, whatever it is, it's so easy to just notice what's not good. It's so easy to focus on and emphasize the problems and take for granted all the good parts. That's just how we're wired. That's how it is. But sometimes what happens is when the challenging parts become the focus of the relationship, there's nothing left. We don't ever realize how much more we should be focusing and noticing and emphasizing and talking about and harping on all the good. And automatically it makes it easier for your husband to hear how good he is and to know who respects him and loves him and cares for him and appreciates him. And it makes it easier for you to tolerate sometimes the things that aren't so good. Okay, so they're not great, I don't love them. And maybe I can still do something about them. But there's still so much more to it that people don't think about it nearly as much as they should. So I just want to recap, because I think it's very important, these few points together. One is, don't generalize. Don't generalize. Don't talk about everything in one big mishmash and then fool yourself or confuse yourself and your husband about what really is okay and what's not okay. You know, cooking for Shabbos and shopping for you, by the way, which most husbands don't necessarily cook for Shabbos, and if he's doing that late at night, because that's what works for him, maybe it's even something to be thankful for. You know, being out late at night or not knowing where he is at night, that's something that is maybe a little more concerning, like I said. So I think just breaking it down and knowing what your focus really is and knowing how to determine, you know, which part does affect me directly, which part I really can't handle. And even when I communicate about that, I'll do it in a way that's not challenging and not in a way that's going to make me get defensive. And in general, being respectful and knowing how to connect and see the good. And I hope that all that will definitely make a big difference for both of you. Will make it easier for him to accommodate you and make you happy. It will make it easier for you, you know, to become happy and to be accommodated and to get things that are important to you. And like we started off with, you know, when things are challenging, when Yaakov Avinu had challenges, they were opportunities. They were opportunities to do the right thing. I was living by Lovan. I was challenged. I overcame that challenge. I did the right thing, and I got another mitzvah in my pocket. So we don't look for these challenges, and we don't look, you know, for things to go wrong. We don't look for things to be unhappy about. But when they come, dealing with them responsibly, not being overtaken by it, not letting it disturb the relationship, not letting it distort the focus, is definitely you know, something that's really going to help everyone. And when we overcome these challenges, we should feel good about them. We should see them as opportunities for growth and connection. And I yourself, with the right attitude and the right approach, live together.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.